Okay, I'm in the barbershop this morning, and Sean, who cuts my hair and, according to my wife, is an artist.
He is, man. Your hair looks great.
It's a great fade.
You know whose hair doesn't look great?
Who?
Mine. There's people who listen to the show who've never seen me. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that is kind of amazing.
Or you. There's people who listen to the show who don't know who either of us are.
Yeah, don't know what we look like in any
way. I'm super grateful for those people. Yeah. Sorry, keep going.
Yeah, we're grateful for you. Yeah. I'm in the barbershop, and Sean told me that he was listening to some YouTube channel that was talking about the amazing facts about peregrine falcons. And
I'm so excited for this.
He was like, he was saying all these things. He was actually saying things that were so astounding that I mean, no disrespect to Sean on this, but when I left the barbershop, I looked them up.
Wow.
As I was driving away, I was like, I'm going to listen to a video about like amazing facts about peregrine falcons.
Was it awesome?
He was right about all of it.
Yeah.
Like number one, he was like, there are peregrine falcons it's the fastest animal on earth.
Yeah.
They've been clocked up to 242 miles an hour on a dive.
Holy cow.
How can a falcon fly as fast as an F1 like a Formula One race car?
I don't know. My thing is like, how do they know how to stop without hitting the ground? That's what I'm like. If they're diving, when do they know?
Yeah,
like, when do the math of, like, I got to hit the brakes before I crash headfirst?
All the trigonometry and all that. Like,
I haven't thought the word trigonometry in 10 years. I don't even know what it means. And I did a class.
I haven't thought the word trigonometry. That was great. So he was talking about he was talking about the fact that they can see 2 miles away.
Wow. Like, holy cow.
So the article that I looked up said the peregrine falcon can see 8 times better than you can see.
Oh my goodness.
If they were like, granted that the person reading this article has 20/20 vision or has corrective lenses to correct them to 20/20 vision, a peregrine falcon can see 8 times better than you can see.
Holy cow.
They can see something 2 miles away. And what was so funny, we're in this conversation, he's like, you know, there's all these, everybody struggles when there's a terrible thunderstorm. The peregrine falcon just flies above the storm.
Wow.
And he was like, let me get out of here. He was like, are you kidding me? They fly above the storm.
Wow.
And just look down upon it and wait.
Wait till it's over?
Wait till it's over. Or go to where the storm is not happening. Like, they're amazing.
Do they live in the eastern United States?
I think so.
That'd be interesting to look up.
The other thing he said was that human beings have been training peregrine falcons to hunt for them for 2,000 years.
How do you train that? That's the thing I don't understand.
All of these things added together is just such a phenomenon. I was just sitting there, you know, this absolute artist is taking 45 minutes to an hour to perfect the fade on the back and sides of my head. And then is that its call?
Yeah.
Thomas just, this is a little known fact about Thomas. Actually, it's probably not that little. My dog just got super
Yoshi's
pumped.
Like,
oh, Yoshi is fired up. She started turning her head to the side. What is that? Now she's over with Thomas.
Hey, dog.
So we're in my living room right now. Yoshi's smelling the mic. But Thomas likes to play bird calls on his phone to attract different birds to his backyard.
It's weird. I love it, actually. I sit on my back deck and I put a Bluetooth speaker under my bird feeder and I just watch them come.
Gosh.
Sorry, you were telling a story about
Sean.
No,
not at all. But yeah, it was just amazing. He's perfecting this fade and making sure, just going over it and over it and over it, making sure he doesn't miss any of the stragglers. And just saying all these facts about peregrine falcons. But then he mixed in a fact that I don't think was about peregrine falcons.
What was it?
I think it was about the thick-billed murre, which is a bird in Maine.
Okay. How did you know that?
Maine and Canada.
Did it come on next on YouTube?
I looked it up.
Okay.
But he said the peregrine falcon can dive like 30 meters
Underwater?
Yeah. No. And I was like, no, I don't think that's right.
They're not a water bird. I mean, I guess if you hit the water going 224 miles an hour, you'll go 30 meters probably.
242 miles. Like, oh. Like the speed of an F1 car. But in any case, the thick-billed muir in Canada and Maine can dive 700 feet.
Wow.
It's the deepest diving bird that can also fly in the air.
Wow, that's amazing.
And then when it dives for fish, it snags a fish, and then it stores, like it. I don't even know how to explain this to you. This is crazy.
Okay.
It like moves its feathers in such a way as it's diving, so as to trap oxygen in the layers of feathers, so that when it is going to resurface, it expels that oxygen and becomes like bubble, like propulsion.
Wow.
Like it surfaces extremely fast.
That's amazing. It doesn't get the bends?
It doesn't get the bends.
How?
Exactly.
I guess it's you.
Thomas and I are giving each other a knowing glance, referencing an old 90s era Radiohead song.
Yeah, it's one of the best.
Baby's got the bends.
Oh, no.
People who don't listen to Radiohead are like, stop, just talk.
I want to live, breathe. I want to be part of the human race. It's an amazing guitar. Like,
I want to live.
It's so cool.
We haven't. And then he like goes up too high and he goes an octave down.
Yeah.
Yeah. We haven't heard you sing on this podcast race. In a while.
It's so cool. I think the like post chorus on that is, he says, lying in a bed with my drip feet on.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Yeah. Sitting in the water fountain, something like that. Yeah. It's a great song. But the thick-billed muir, like, can dive to 300 to 700 feet and then traps so much air in the layers of its feathers that it just broom, pops back up.
That's amazing.
It also eats while it's resurfacing.
God. That's unbelievable.
So cool. I love birds. They're amazing.
Oh, man. I love birds too.
Welcome to Ancient and New. This is a ornithological podcast, apparently.
I wish it was. I'm just kidding.
Where we talk about the scriptures. Thomas and I are going to talk about the same scripture today. We're going to look at the odd way that the Gospel of Matthew begins. The beginning of the New Testament. Thomas and I are both in a community group at Triple C that is hosted by Sam and Christy Fox. And we meet in a park, a city park, an hour before church, and we're talking about the Gospel of Matthew. But we've been talking about the odd way that the Gospel of Matthew begins, which is a genealogy of Jesus. So this is Matthew chapter 1, verse 1. A record of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. And then for, what, 16 verses, it goes through just names. Abraham, the father of Isaac, the father
Abraham
of Jacob.
Abraham had Isaac. Isaac, he had Jacob. Jacob, he had Judah and his kin.
Not only do we have Thomas.
And then Perez and Zerah came from Judah's woman Tamar. Perez, he brought Hezron up and then came.
We haven't had Thomas sing on this podcast in a while. And now he has sung twice, including his impression of Andrew
Peterson.
You got
Tom York and Andrew Peterson in the same episode.
Nobody's ever done that before.
Nope.
It's never happened. Okay, just a long list of names. 14 generations from Abraham to David, 14 generations from David to the exile to Babylon, and 14 generations from Babylon to the birth of Jesus. and I just wanted us to do an episode where we talk about this. So maybe, should I read it? Or, I mean, you sang it, a lot of it.
You can. I would just like, I don't think you have to. The thing I would say, well, I don't know. Maybe people, that's what people come here is to be read to. I don't know. But I think before you do, if you do, I've always, up until probably the last little bit, I've always just skipped this whenever I've read the book of Matthew.
I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you gave permission, the people permission to just like sigh and go, oh yeah, we totally. It's like when you're reading it's like if somebody tries to read the Old Testament and they get to the book of Numbers and they're like, well, I'm skipping that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think I've always done that. I've always skipped Psalm 119, and I've always skipped the beginning of Matthew 1 because it's just like, I've just never given them space at all. I've just been like, well, first of all, Psalm 119 takes up a lot of space.
So much
needs
space.
A lot of space. But
longest chapter in the Bible.
Yeah, but at the, you know, it's alphabetical, correct? Am I not mistaken on that?
I think he divides every section up according to a
letter
of the Hebrew
alphabet. Yeah, so it's like, well, you just read it, Psalm 119, A, B, C, however you want to do that. And it's like, okay, that makes sense. But I've always just skipped this over because I've been like, it's just a list of names.
Right.
So
people that have been dead for a long time.
A long time, yeah. 42 generations of people.
And like,
ish,
the 42 generations of people end 2,000 years ago. So you're talking,
yeah.
I mean, Abraham was 4,000 years ago.
Yeah.
Or 3,500 years ago, something like that. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
If you want to read it, feel free.
We'll read some of it. So, okay. Abraham, the father of Isaac, the father of Jacob, the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah, the father of Perez and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar. Perez, the father of Hezron. Hezron, the father of Ram. Ram, the father of Amminadab. Amminadab, the father of Nahshon. And it goes on like that a lot. Like we get to a couple of really famous names, like Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of King David. David was the father of Solomon, whose mother had been Uriah's wife. We go farther, we have people like Hezekiah, the father of Manasseh. Manasseh, by the way, the worst human being possibly that ever lived. Josiah, the father of Jeconiah, his brothers at the time of the exile. And then you go farther and farther and farther. Eleazar, the father of Mathan, the father of Jacob, and Jacob, the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, who is called the Christ. So I didn't read the whole thing, but read enough of it for you to realize, like, that's what this is. This section of scripture is a very naturally skippable section.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good way.
But at the same time that it feels naturally skippable, there's also some really cool stuff in here.
Yeah, there's a lot of really cool stuff in there. Sorry, I flipped over Luke's version of it just for a second.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, the Luke genealogy is a little different. What most people believe, by the way, just as a side note, that Luke gives us the genealogy through like Mary's version of her genealogy. Both Mary and Joseph were descendants of King David. And so in the Gospel of Matthew, we have Jesus's genealogy as the adopted son of Joseph. And in the Gospel of Luke, we have Jesus's genealogy as the biological son of Mary, but both descended from David and Abraham.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And I'm sure there are going to be things from this that we've stolen from, that we stole from our community group just straight up. Cause we had a week's worth of conversation about it.
That's
really cool.
You know, they're going to have to deal with that. They're going to have to make peace with that.
But I think it's like, yeah, there's a lot of little things in there that are just, that are so interesting. Like the fact that it mentions women.
Oh yeah.
Which is not something that
huge.
I haven't read a lot of genealogies, but I know historically they go through men. And this mentions five women.
Five women,
yeah.
Four women by name, but it mentions five women.
Yeah, I think that's super cool. I personally just love that Matthew puts it in there, and it feels, it feels like a proof text in its own little bit. It is for sure. But it's interesting because I think every once in a while I'll find something in the Gospels or anywhere in scripture where I think like, if someone was making this up, here's a good reason why that's not the case. And one of it is that he put this in there. It just feels like,
right.
If I were trying to captivate you, just to captivate you, to draw you into something, I would not start with a list of names of people.
Right.
Right. Like I would, there's so many things about the Gospels that to me is like, this is how this is
exciting, interesting, amazing tales.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's so cool because all that is in there, but then you start the first one with a list of names and it's like, yeah, I don't know. I think that's just a really cool thing.
To your point, like I have ever since I was like 20 years old, I've loved The Lord of the Rings. And The Lord of the Rings has really exciting stories. There's battles. There are cool, you know, magical spells. There's all kinds of, you know, prophecies becoming true. All these really, really cool things that are also like, you know, the Gospels are filled with like, there are action scenes. There are miracles. There are prophecies coming true. Mm. But then at the end of The Lord of the Rings, after the whole story is over, there's like 60 more pages in the book. And you're like, what is this?
Mm.
And they're appendices. And they're like, and a lot of them are genealogies and lists of names, just because Professor Tolkien was weird.
Yeah, like, so interesting.
Like he made genealogies of people that didn't exist. But all that is at the end of the... nobody reads those.
No.
Unless you're like Stephen Colbert.
Yeah, and like, does he love Lord of the Rings?
He's like the biggest Lord of the Rings dork in the world. Oh. Like, yeah, he like goes to New Zealand and wins competitions.
Oh, really?
Like trivia competitions.
Wow,
yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, like only if you're as big a nerd as Stephen Colbert do you read that kind of stuff.
I know, it's kind of interesting. This is a side note, but it was an off-putting thing about the Lord of the Rings thing, which is so funny.
Yeah.
Like I read the Lord of the Rings this time last year, and then I got to a place. It was after the Eagles had scooped them up and flown them. I guess they flown to Rivendell. Is that right?
That's right.
And right there, I was like, okay,
they made it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is funny.
Yeah. And there's still so much going.
I remember telling you and Nino that, and you're like, no, what
no,
the
he
heck?
Goes there's back to the Shire.
Yeah. I was like, wow. Okay.
And there's the Grey Havens. And then if you're super nerdy, like Stephen Colbert, then there's the appendices. But like Matthew starts with the appendix. He starts with the list of names, and he's going to go on to give us miracles, and he's going to give us the fulfillment of prophecy, and he's going to give us amazing teachings. He's going to give us all the things that are the quotable stuff from the Gospels, but he starts with this. And one of the pieces of that, of course, is that he is making a point to Jewish people in particular. Jesus is the king you've all been waiting on. He's the Messiah.
Mm.
And so he's giving, like you said, the word proof text. He's giving like the bona fides, like this is the bona fides, like this dude has the right to be the king. Boom. You know, here's the list of names. And so that's a piece of this. But like, one of the things that I love about this is, even though when you look at it, it looks like the most skippable, like you said, this is the most skippable part of Matthew, but there are some really cool things in there. Like, and you alluded to one of them, which is the fact that we, in a legal document describing why someone has the right to sit on the throne of Israel, and in fact, ultimately the world, we have listed 5 women. And that's a little clue into something that is really, really important and something we should draw out of the story of Jesus, which is powerful people don't include certain people.
Right.
They don't value certain people. Jesus does. Like powerful people in the first century did not value or include women. They couldn't testify in court. They couldn't hold property. And yet the story of Jesus values and includes them. Not only that, the women that are listed are foreigners, and some of them are women of ill repute. So we have at least one prostitute listed. We have another woman who pretended to be a prostitute in order to get something to happen. And like we have at least of these 5 women, at least 2 of them are Africans. And there's some just really cool stuff going on there that like, and some of this pertains to exactly some of the things that we're walking through in our world today, culturally, which is just that like the story of Jesus includes people who are marginalized, people who are mistreated, people who are outsiders, people who are ostracized, including foreigners, immigrants, and people of African descent, people with black bodies, people with black skin, and people who are immigrants. Mm. And they're right there in the story of Jesus, included and exalted in the story of Jesus. And I think that is so cool.
Yeah. And I think it should be a wake up call to a lot of people. And it's so where we live culturally, Christianity can and easily has become just like a religion for white people in the South. Yeah. And it is white.
For white and, people, of white people, by right. white people.
Yeah.
Which and, is so ridiculous.
Yeah. And it's sad and it's hurtful and it's not fair and it's frustrating. And it's like, if you just open a book and read, you find out that it has no place anywhere in here. There's not a white person in this.
That's
right. You know, like the white people are the least represented in this.
Yeah. The closest you can get is in the book of like in, well, in one of Paul's letters when he says, I hope to go to Spain.
Yeah.
That's it. That's as close as you get to kind of right. sort of Europeans and white people is like Paul saying, I hope I make it to Spain. But like this genealogy mentions Ruth, and Ruth was African. Mm. She was from Africa. She had black skin mm-hmm. and she is part of the genealogical history of Jesus.
Yeah.
It's possible that Rahab, the prostitute in Jericho was the same. I mean, we find out that like Solomon's mom was the wife of Uriah the Hittite. She was probably a Hittite. She mm. was an outsider. Yeah. She was an immigrant. Like these people are outsiders. They're everybody in this genealogy was either brown or black.
Yeah.
There's no white skin. There's no blonde hair. There are no blue eyes,
right.
which is, but like the crazy thing for guys like you and me, like we grew up in churches where there were paintings of Jesus on the wall with blonde hair and blue eyes right. or very light brown hair and blue yeah. eyes.
Right.
But he did not have either. No. Not that there's anything wrong with blue eyes.
No.
My wife has blue eyes. You know, one of my kids has blue eyes, but like Jesus didn't have blue eyes and he had brown skin. He had black hair. He had a black beard.
Right.
And he had brown and black people in his genealogical tree.
Right. Right. I think it just needs that whole thing needs to die.
It needs to die. And the truth needs to be amplified.
Yeah.
And the more it is, the more people feel, I think that's the thing that I love so much about, it's like at first blush, starting off the story of Jesus with a genealogy is like, oh, bro, swing and a miss. You right. could have made this so cool.
Right.
You could have started out with like the feeding of the 5,000 and just come out the gate hard. Right.
Come out swinging.
Yeah, just like so. Like it's like if you had Ronald Acuna as your leadoff hitter. It's like yesterday this brother hit a 481-foot home run.
Did he really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
481 feet.
That's a long ways.
It's a long ways to hit a ball. But like Matthew could have done that. He right. had those stories in his hip pocket.
Right.
He starts with this genealogy. But starting with this, he's telling us things. He's telling us outsiders are welcome.
Mm, yeah.
The marginalized people are welcome. Women are part of this story. Like he's telling us Africans are part of this story. He's telling us so many specific things.
Right.
One thing that he tells us clearly is, and I'm so thankful for this, sinners are part of this story.
Yeah. Yeah. If that weren't the case, none of us are part of the story. You know, like none of right. us have any part in any of it, which I'm super thankful for. There's a lot of, it's just when you just read through it or when I was reading through it, I had snapshots of these people from the Old Testament.
Yeah.
And it's cool. It's just like,
you know what's up. Cause you've read the whole thing. So, you know, like some of these people are.
Yeah. Hideous. Yeah. And like, but it was just cool. And I think that, which we definitely talk about this in our community, but I think that the thing that probably carried for a Hebrew person at this time and an Israelite at this time, it would have been like even cooler. You know, these are all people they've heard stories of for their whole life. And then
yeah.
now they're, you know, someone says the name, I don't know, Hezekiah, and they're automatically thinking of so-and-so or whatever the thing is. And I think it's really cool because it's like the thing that I always land on now, whenever I read this, it's just like, to me, it's become a reminder that God keeps his promises.
Yeah.
And will always keep his promises, that he tells the truth and will always tell the truth. Mm. When he says it, shoot, I didn't mean to yawn. Sorry.
It's okay. But Eric Rice will be tallying that up.
Say something. But when
he's done it.
But like, it's a beautiful reminder that God keeps his promises, because he promised Abraham that this would happen.
That's right.
And then Matthew, I don't know if that clicked for anyone back then. I don't know if that's the purpose of this, but for me it is. It's not the purpose, but for me it reminds me of that. It's just like, oh, there was a time a long time ago when God said to this man Abraham something that he thought was impossible, and then it came true. And it's just like, oh, that is so cool. And this is empirical truth, that it empirical evidence that it did happen, which is really cool.
It is cool. And it's like, there's so many layers that we could talk about with this thing. But like, one of the things is that it's like, it starts with what you're talking about. Like, God made a promise to one dude, I'm going to turn you into a nation. And then he did. And then they got a king who sucked, and then he was deposed. And then this amazing king united the whole country. That's David. And then it's like, we did it. We're actually not just a dude anymore. We have become a nation of people, and we have this land and everything. And then they were awful, and then they lost that land and went into exile and had just centuries of confusion and difficulty and just like, where are we and all that kind of stuff. And if you start at the promise, and then you go to the glory of the nation, and then you go into the disrepute of all that confusion, and all through there's a thread running, which is the line of Abraham and David is still running all the way to Jesus. And it's like, that is so cool. It's like the promise that you're talking about ran from when you couldn't imagine it to like a glorious, amazing version of it to like a lots of confusion and difficulty. And I personally just think about like the arc of most people's lives, especially people that like grew up in church. It's like you grow up and it's like people tell you Bible stories and you're like, that sounds amazing. And then you have like a time in your life, probably around kind of high school and college, where you're like really, really into it and really growing. And it's like, oh, this is the part. This is like, I'm rooted in this story of Jesus. Yeah. And I'm being used and I'm part of this thing. And then for a lot of people, you get into like years after that, after kind of college, and you just start kind of get into your working life where you're like, where is this whole thing? And I'm kind of in the desert. I'm kind of in confusion and stuff like that. And through that whole thread, that whole arc, the promise, the glory, the confusion, that it's like the story of Jesus is not letting go. He's still a part of that. And I've never thought about this before this exact moment right here, but I think for a lot of people, they could find their own story and kind of the arc of the genealogy of Jesus in Matthew 1.
Yeah, that's a cool word. I hadn't thought about that before. That's really helpful. Because I think for mine in particular, you said something that resonated. Like, yeah, I just like grew up in this thing. But there was a point in there, either in high school or college, where I was telling someone this the other day, like, I had to make a decision for myself. Like, this is my faith. Right. This is not the Cox faith that I have been grandfathered into, right, because it doesn't really work like that. But like,
that's right.
I, at some point in my life, I decided like, this is my specific faith. Mm. I'm choosing this. I want this. I want this life with Jesus, not because I've always known it and always had it. And
right,
not because I was baby Jesus at my family's church growing up. And
what you were.
I was, and I'm still known as that when I go there, you know, gosh, which is like awesome. But yeah, it's funny. I think that's a really cool word. And I mean, this whole thing is, it's easy to skip, but it's also worth not. And it's worth thinking about and chewing on, and like worth thinking about these people's role in the whole thing, each one of them, even when they're crummy, like you said with Manasseh. It's just like, yeah, somehow he was still used in this whole thing. His name is forever inked in Matthew chapter 1, you know?
Yeah, it's just mercy.
And when I have a day, because they happen a lot, where I'm just like, I am crummy, I'm gross, I am still a sinner, and I'm great, graciously forgiven of it and mercifully forgiven of it. And it's a beautiful thing, but it's like, I think we all have days where we think like, this either isn't true about me or I can't be part of it because of how I acted or what I thought or what I said or And that, like, you know, if the first chapter of the book about my life, like, there wouldn't really be a, I mean, if it was a timeline, it would be filled with ups and downs and peaks and valleys and, but with a steady climbing walk toward Jesus throughout that. And I don't know that that necessarily reflects it because, but you know, like, we don't know much about Jacob, the father of Joseph, right? Like, we don't know a ton about him.
Mathan.
We don't know much, or, you know, Eliezer or whoever. It's just like, but they're in this. So there's not really, you know, we can't look at this and say, like, that's exactly what this was. It was like a solid, steady, like, growth towards Jesus, but it was a straight line directly towards him, which is really cool. And I think at the end of my life, that's what it's going to be.
Nice.
Like, when I'm however old and on my deathbed, or like I get hit by a car at whatever age or whatever, however the Lord takes me out of this world, you know, it's like when I get to that point, I think it's just going to be like, no, all the peaks and valleys, whatever, I got here. I got here. This was what you had planned for me the whole time.
That's right.
And the whole time I've been walking with you, and thankfully you've been walking with me in the whole thing. You know, like, you never left me. You were always beside me, even when I was the giantest mess up of all time.
And I love that.
I don't know.
I love that. I love that straight line idea. You got me here. And I love that Matthew is declaring this is for everybody.
Yeah.
This is for Jews. This is for Gentiles. This is for brown people. This is for black people. This is for men. This is for women. This is for insiders. This is for outsiders. This is for people like Josiah that were awesome. And this is for people like Judah who were horrible.
Yeah.
Like, this is for sinners. This is for saints. This is for everybody. Jesus has a way to bring everybody in and to put everybody on this path that wants to be a part of it. You know, it's just so kind. Yeah. So sweet. Also, it's when cool. You said that thing about, getting hit by a car, I imagined a really low car, like a car that has like a low profile and a low nose, and you're so tall and your ankles are so small that I imagine it hitting your ankles and just leaving you spinning.
Have you ever seen did you ever watch Mythbusters?
No.
You really?
Well, maybe like,
you said that like, I was so crazy for liking Mythbusters.
No, it's a very popular show.
Yeah. They did a myth once on, like, they tested one on how, apparently up north, if you hit a moose with the right size car, think about it, like, the legs holding that animal up are not very big, but that body is huge. Like, I think, like, it is not a good thing because you could take the legs out and they would just, but the body just drops into the.
Oh, it would just crush. And you're crushed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember them doing one of those. And I think that's what would happen if someone hit me. Just like Big Bird legs, just break like a twig, like a toothpick. And I was walking Dobby, our dog, yesterday while Maddie had campaigners. And a red Nissan Xterra drove by us going about 45 on a, you know, 25 mile an hour road over a blind hill.
Was it Titus?
No, it wasn't. I thought it was. I was like, dude, you need to slow down, but it wasn't. And I just, like, I remember looking at Dobby, and I think she looked at me like, we would have gone flying if that hit us. Because it was not far from us. We were just like, oh, it almost happened.
I just imagine, like, your shoes being left on the ground. Just like your legs would just snap. That's like
straight
twigs.
From a cartoon, man. Yeah, that's amazing.
Boom. Folks, thanks for joining us today. I hope this was edifying for you. It was a kind of a different episode, but we're grateful that you guys listen. I am Lee.
And I'm Thomas.
This has been Ancient and New.